Okay, we're back. You're listening to MJ13. This is Chuck Faye here with Niara Isley on the other side of Skype. And of course, in the studio, we have Neil, Mr. Neil Glue, still here. He's lying like sleeping.
Like sleeping.
Very tired, Chuck Faye. Very tired.
Okay, let's forget about him right now. So before the break time, we have shared with Niara how you get back all this memory from the missing time. Is that the only missing time section you have?
That's the only real missing time that I recall, yeah.
But that is the only abduction experience you have.
Well, I've been an abductee, or I should say an experiencer. I like experiencer better. Mm. From childhood through young adulthood and middle adulthood, I had a lot of experiences with the ETs. Mm. There were, do you want to go into the ET experiences now, or do you want to finish up with the military? Which would you rather prefer?
Yeah, you can, we can go ahead with the alien abduction first.
Okay. Well, they picked me up. The first memory that I had from the session with Bud Hopkins was being taken. I had a dream of my sister and two friends that I couldn't see who they were. Mm. And my sister and two friends, they took me out in the middle of the night and they left me under a street lamp. And they said, stay in the light of this street lamp until we come back and get you. And I stayed there and I was alone for a long time. And finally I got so scared that I started screaming and then I woke up in my bed screaming. Mm. So that was the dream.
Yeah, but you thought that was a normal bad dream.
Yeah, it was a bad. I thought it was a bad dream, but it's unusual for me to wake up screaming. Mm. I've never really woke up screaming before or since.
Right.
So it was pretty intense. Mm. So when we looked at that experience under hypnosis, it was ETs that came. My bedroom. I woke up and the bedroom was full of light. The ETs took me up out of my bed with some kind of, they levitated me up out of the bed through the ceiling into a craft. And while I was there, they examined me on a table and they did something to me that after I came out of hypnosis, I thought it reminded me of an ultrasound. And they took this piece of equipment and they put it over the abdomen and kind of looked all around the abdomen with this thing. When I was under hypnosis, I didn't know what to call it, so I called it a stomach presser. But they were pressing pretty hard on the abdomen with this thing. Mm. And then when I came out of hypnosis, I thought, man, that reminds me of an ultrasound.
Right.
And so they seemed to be looking inside the abdominal area for some reason, for some purpose, I don't know. But I'm guessing from the other memories that I retrieved with Gloria Hawker that they were examining me at that point to see if I had the right kind of, if I was constructed the right way or the way that they needed me to be constructed in my reproductive area to see if I was suitable for some of their hybridization projects. Mm. And because that was the recurring theme throughout my young adulthood.
Right.
Was pregnancies that it seemed like, you know, according to the doctor, I didn't go to doctors and get pregnancy tests and everything else like that. I was kind of a different sort of a woman that didn't want much to do with doctors.
Right.
And I didn't really have missed periods.
Right.
Or missed menstrual cycles. What I did have, though, was very tiny menstrual cycles for many years.
A tiny what?
Very, very, very tiny, very small amount of menstrual cycle.
All right, okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then every time I was around a doctor for an examination, they would say, you know, are you pregnant? Mm. And I'd say, no, I'm not pregnant. I can't be pregnant because of whatever. Mm-hmm. And then finally, they asked so many times over the years when I was around a doctor, they would ask if I was pregnant. And to me, there was no way I could be pregnant. Mm. And finally, I said, why do you think I'm pregnant? Mm. You doctors ask me if I'm pregnant. It seems like every time I come in for a pelvic exam.
Right.
And they said, you know, and the one doctor I said, well, your uterus is enlarged. So it's like, okay, fine. And it was kind of frustrating. Right. And then at age 35, I had a tubal ligation so that I would not get pregnant anymore and I didn't have to take the birth control pill anymore. And when the doctor went in to do the tubal ligation, he opened me up and I was under local anesthetic, which means I was awake for the procedure.
Right.
And he opened me up and went in there and he says, my God, you're full of adhesions in here. Have you had any other procedures? And I said, no, I haven't had any other procedures. And he said, well, your whole abdominal cavity is full of adhesions. And he sounded really concerned. And so I felt concerned about it, but I didn't know what to think or what to make of it. And then in 2003, years later, in 2003, when I had the hypnosis with Gloria Hawker, we found out they were harvesting fetuses by going in the belly button with a needle. And they would probe around in there with that needle and take the fetus out of the uterus and kind of harvest it out of the uterus.
Right.
And they did this, and they did this many times.
Yeah, but this is all done during the abduction period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're not only having the alien abduction as a child, you have that even when you were adults, even when you joined the military.
Yeah. I'm sure it was ongoing the whole time.
But at the same time, you got the MyLab at the same time. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, at least while I was in the military, I had those experiences. And I don't know if I've had any MyLab experiences since I left the military. Again, I would have to have more hypnosis to explore that, if that's a possibility.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I suddenly have questions I want to ask. That you mentioned that you when you fly to the moon and you lay on the floor to craft, you see people next to you. Do you know these people? I mean, are they working in the military?
Under hypnosis, I seem to recognize one of the men.
Oh, he works in the military as well.
Yeah, he was in the military, and he was attached to the radar unit that I was attached to. But that's really all I'm going to say, because if he is having his own issues, and he may or may not have recalled his memories.
Right.
And I can't really speak about him too much more than what I've said, because it's really up to him.
Right.
If he comes to a place where he remembers something or wants to explore it, that's up to him.
Right. So you didn't really talk to him after this?
No.
Okay, let's go back to the case. Can you tell the difference between the alien abduction and the MyLab? Is that right?
Yeah, I can tell the difference from what it is for me. I tend to be a little psychic.
Right.
And maybe that's a gift from my contact with the ETs. It's possible. Many people come back with greater intuitive gifts from their contact with ETs.
Right.
But when I was with the ETs, they were almost completely devoid of emotion. And I never picked up anything from them other than a scientific curiosity about what they were doing to me.
Right.
I never got the impression that they were inflicting any harm or pain or misery on me with an intention to harm.
Right.
Any discomfort I felt, any fear that I felt, was just incidental to the process of their examination.
Right.
It wasn't intended to be harmful. And there was so much emotional flatness to them that I was angry when I was a little kid, but as things progressed and I grew older and this continued to be part of my nocturnal life, I got over being angry with them.
Right.
They were just like a force of nature, you know, and they didn't really mean to cause harm, so far as I could tell. Now, the military experiences was very, very different. These people intended to harm. These people intended to inflict terror.
Right.
Part of one of the things that I had to study to try to understand what happened to me is trauma-based mind control. When you inflict enough trauma on someone, you can get them to compartmentalize, to splinter off a piece of their memory and bury it in the subconscious.
Right.
And so they inflict that trauma intentionally, with an intent to harm, with an intent to terrorize. And there was one blonde security guard who I had a lot of interaction with. Right. And I think he must have been a sociopath, because he really enjoyed inflicting pain and misery. And he was very snide about it. He was very smug about it. He would gloat the fact that I couldn't do anything to help myself and that he could do whatever he wanted. He was really a pretty ugly person. And so there's a night and day contrast between what I experienced with the ETs and what I experienced with other human beings.
Okay, I see. Obviously, you can tell the difference. Depends on the feeling. Did they actually talk to you when they ask you to work? I mean, the human beings, when they order you to do some work here, do some work there, did they actually talk to you?
Yeah, they would talk to me to order me to do things. They didn't talk to me too much beyond that, other than say, go here, do this, go there, do that. And, you know, mostly it was just orders.
But what about the alien, the reptilians? Did they have any interaction with you?
No, I didn't have much interaction with them.
Right, okay.
At least not to my knowledge, not to my knowledge.
Right, you stayed there for a week, and before they released you back to the Earth, did they do anything? Did they say anything? Like did they threaten you not to tell this to anybody? Did they do anything, any process to erase your memory?
Yeah, well, yeah, there are things. Since I had the hypnosis, I have had flashbacks.
Right.
Let me tell you about the time when I saw the craft out on the Nevada test site at night. After we saw the craft and after we were done at the radar site, they took us to what I think was Area 51. I'm not positive it was Area 51. I just couldn't imagine any place out in the middle of the desert like that that had so much at it that wouldn't be Area 51. So I don't know for sure if it was Area 51. It could have been. They took us there in a bus that had painted over windows, and it was an old like school bus painted Air Force Navy blue with painted over windows. When we got off the bus in Area 51, we were taken into a medical facility. We were sat down in a waiting room. The lights were off in the waiting room, so it was dark. The only light coming in was from a hallway behind where we were sitting. One by one, they called our names to go into a little room adjacent to the waiting room. When it was my turn to go in there, I had to lay down on a stainless steel examining table with all my fatigues on, and an armed security guard was in the room with me. I waited there for a while, very, very scared. Then a guy came in the door in a white lab coat and said, "Stay calm," three times, in kind of a monotone voice. And he came up beside the right side of my head, and he injected me in the right side of the neck with a hypodermic needle of some unknown stuff. I don't know what was in that needle. And then I had, I remembered this in the situation with Bud Hopkins. And then in 2003, I looked at this again because I wanted to know what happened after the injection. So in 2003, when I had the hypnosis session with Gloria Hocker, I found that after the injection, two security guards physically picked me up on either arm off the table and took me out a different doorway. Down that, in that doorway was a staircase that went very far down. It was like a nightmarish long staircase. At the bottom of the staircase, I was thrown in a little room, and the door was locked after me while I went through the effects of that injection. And it was a very bad experience going through the effects of that injection. About all I could do was curl up on the floor and scream. So that's trauma. You get injected by something, you don't know what it is. And then it does that kind of stuff to you. That's trauma. Mm. So I was finally getting over the trauma of the shot when the two security guards, one of which was the blonde one that I talked about a minute ago, and they drugged me out of the room, and I was raped, and I was sexually assaulted in front of eight people. Eight people watched, and one of those people was a gray alien. And so I was raped by one security guard and then the other one. And so this kind of trauma, when I first had the memories, I thought, what on earth is going on here? You know, why would they do such horrible things to someone? And then I had to study about trauma and trauma-based mind control.
Right.
So just to try to understand the context in which this kind of treatment would even occur, because it's really horrible.
It is.
And, you know, it's the kind of thing that would happen at Abu Ghraib or, you know, Guantanamo Bay. It was really awful. So I had to study a little bit about mind control and Project Paperclip and a whole bunch of other things that gave me information to understand why they would traumatize someone so badly. And the trauma itself is designed to get you to fragment your memory and bury certain parts of it away. When the trauma is too severe, then the mind takes it and puts it in the subconscious,
right,
so that you can go on functioning in your life without being rattled by trauma constantly. So then after I had hypnosis, I had other flashbacks.
Right.
In the flashbacks, I remember being in an interrogation-style setting under a light and being just hammered away at, like, verbal abuse. And then every so often I would get a shock in the neck and shoulder area with something like an electric cattle prod. And then there was another flashback I had. Somebody was doing some massage on me, and they started massaging around my neck, and I just went rigid. Because when their hands were around my neck, it was like suddenly I remembered somebody choking me. Somebody slowly choked me until I lost consciousness. And then they let go, and then I could come back to consciousness, and then sometimes they'd choke me again until I lost consciousness. And this was a traumatization technique and something to try to control me.
So
and they also threatened my daughter, who was very young at the time.
Oh my God. I mean, so all these memories are like, just like piece by pieces. It's not like actually connected. I mean, just like a little bit from here, a little bit from there. But you think the process they did to you is to make you forget or to force you to block this kind of memory. Is that right? Well, I mean, this is terrible. I mean, I'm sure the audience can understand. It's extremely disturbing. I mean, so I want to ask you questions as a human. Even you get trained in the military, like you must feel extremely angry to have such kind of abuse. So how do you overcome
that? I was very angry for a while. I'm not so much angry anymore. Angry at the ETs. I don't have bad feelings about the ETs. I have bad feelings about people that would do terrible things to other people. And I guess it's possible that I may have some anger about it for the rest of my life. It was pretty severe trauma. But you have to try to get beyond the anger. Otherwise, anger can make you sick. I know that I've been involved with alternative healing for a long time. And I do body-centered work myself, body-centered coaching and therapeutic techniques. And I know that you cannot carry the energy of anger and fear around in your body for a long period of time without a personal cost to your health. And so I've worked very hard to work through the post-traumatic stress. I've worked very hard to get beyond the anger. But, you know, I still have anger come up sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not easy to talk about it at all. Even I keep telling people, even if a friend who knocked off my teeth a few years ago, and I would still feel the anger and still angry with him, and I still also think about what to do, do something to revenge or something like that. I mean, that is extremely difficult to overcome this kind of anger and painful. Even now, I'm just listening to you and I still feel very disturbing. I mean, it's awful. I mean, is there any special way? Is there any unique way you use to overcome this kind of painful?
Well, there's a philosophy called you have to feel it to heal it. And that's basically what I did, working with the healer here where I live. She helped me to feel my feelings to completion. Mm. So instead of having a difficult feeling come up and then you push it away, you know, maybe have a drink of alcohol or, you know, do something to make the pain or the anger go away. When I was in the therapy process, I was there to feel everything as much as I possibly could so that I could discharge the anger and discharge the fear and discharge the post-traumatic stress. And so I worked for quite a long time to feel my feelings to completion. The other thing that people really need to understand is about forgiveness. Forgiveness is almost even more for the person doing the forgiving than it is for the person that you are trying to forgive. Because when you are able to forgive in yourself, and for me it's an ongoing process, when you're able to forgive, you release some of the energy of what was done to you. You release and make yourself kind of whole again. And if you hang on to it, then the energy that you hold in your body can become illness. It can become cancer. It can become all kinds of things that manifest in the body as illness. So it's really, really important for people to find a way to move beyond the anger and the fear and to find that forgiveness. Because the forgiveness is really most important for you yourself. Right. It's not really to let the people that did bad things to you off the hook. It's really a process for your own health and well-being. And to just kind of let these other people go. I mean, the bad people, bad stuff is eventually going to catch up with them.
Right.
You know, and you don't have to dirty your hands with revenge.
Yeah, that's what we call karma.
Yeah.
So basically, you're telling people the same kind of experience and try to help them to overcome the pain. Are you working to healing people something, some kind of work like this now?
I have done a little bit of this kind of work. I plan to do a lot more right now. I'm working very hard on the book. I really, really want to get my book done and out there so that when I do an interview and people want to know about these experiences, I'll just say, read the book. Because I'm really at a point in my life now where, for my healing, I kind of have to stop repeating this story of trauma.
Right.
You know, I kind of have to be done with it, you know, wash my hands of it and move on. And so the book is a very important part of the process so that it will all be in the book and people can read about it in the book and I don't have to tell this terrible story anymore.
Right.
There comes a point in a person's life where they have to move beyond the terrible story.
Yeah. I would like to ask you one more question about James Box. You know, James Box, right? He came to Hong Kong for his lecture early this year, January. Have you actually in touch with James Box himself, or you know his story, right?
I know some of his story. I've listened to some of his story. It's a remarkable story. And his experiences definitely touched on mine a little bit. He describes being very angry with the ETs and being paralyzed and even having his vocal cords paralyzed. And when I was a little kid, I was scared, but I was also really angry at the ETs because they were controlling me and doing things to me. And I remember learning very quickly that telepathy went both ways. And I remember laying on the table thinking, if I ever get off this table, I'm going to pick your little frail body up and break you in half and watch your fluids run out. And so my reward for that was not being able to move at all. So I was kind of paralyzed, just like Jim was. And I think I had one phone call with Jim once upon a time. It's probably been over a year now.
Right.
where we just had, you know, kind of some brief contact. I'd like to have more contact with them and share some more things. But he has a really remarkable story, and I'm really glad that he's out there and that he has his conscious memory intact. Because hypnosis has been brought under a lot of scrutiny in recent years as being unreliable. And that's a whole nother interview. But but I think that hypnosis actually helps us to access parts of ourselves that we cannot get to consciously. And I think it's an important tool. And once upon a time, it was even accepted in a court of law as evidence. So it was once very highly regarded and very considered very reliable. And it's just in recent years that it's not considered reliable. And I think the reason for that is because so much information is coming out that is damaging to governments and covert ops.
Right. Because after this talk, and a lot of people not really believe in his story, and they all said he didn't really actually contact with the alien. He basically is a victim of my lab, and the mind control process make him miss something or become the US government's tongue. You know, what do you think about Jim Sparks' experience? Do you actually believe he actually contact with alien?
Yes, I do.
You do? Because compared to your experience with the alien abduction, it's pretty much like the same kind, is that right?
Yeah, there are similarities.
Okay, so the alien abduction and military abduction, my lab, could be happen at the same period of time. It doesn't have to be before, or it doesn't have to be after, or anything like that. So there could be many different kind of my lab, is that right?
Yeah, I think there are different varieties of it, yes.
Okay. All right, okay. Yeah. Thanks for your sharing the information with us. I know it is very difficult for you, but I appreciate your time, and the audience in Hong Kong can you can actually help telling people the truth of the MyLab and alien abduction.
Well, thanks, Niara, for coming along.
Thank you for having me. And it gets a little easier to talk about every time, but it'll be good to stop telling the story have it in the book.
You'll finish your book and it'll be there for people to read. And I think this particular interview has gone very well. And I think people will begin to understand how you can have an ET abduction, and at the same time you can have MyLab. And as you MyLab people have said, you know, they back engineer. The military back engineer. They take abductees and back engineer to see what is what they've learned and what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's an integral part of the process, you know. And this is important that Hong Kong people understand this, because they don't have any way to get this information, you know. Just the brave people like yourself that come up and tell
that
it as it is.
That is true. Yeah. We really appreciate that. So when do you think you will finish the book?
I'm planning on having it finished this summer. And I'm hoping June or July, maybe August.
All right.
I'm working very hard on it every day.
Yeah.
No breaks. I don't even take time off on Saturday and Sunday. Every day I'm working on this book.
Wow, that's really hard working. When your book's finished, I definitely will buy one.
Okay, thank you.
With your signature on it, of course. Thanks for Niara Isley for doing this interview with us. All right. Thank you very much.